Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN in association with Betfred. Here we are then, gang. The regular season done and dusted. We know the 14 playoff teams. We figured there would be one or two twists and turns. We maybe didn't see Sunday Night Football happening. We'll get straight into that. All the big stories from the final week of the regular season with the brilliant Greg Brady. Greg Brady, here we are. We've made it into the postseason. Just, I mean, my God, you and I were on radio last night. And there were the twists and turns we expected, particularly from the NFC East, particularly from the Cleveland Browns as well. It was turning into the prototypical Browns night. They got it over the line. We'll get into that. We'll get into all the playoff permutations and the lineup for Super Wild Card Weekend. I hope you've noted the new trademark name for Wild Card Weekend. It's officially Super, but we've got to start with Sunday Night Football. Greg Brady, my God, the amount of vitriol that is being fired at Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles, primarily from New York Giants players, let alone New York Giants fans, is something I've never seen before. And I'm guessing you are going to look at that and think they're entirely vindicated to be as fed up as they are.
It's remarkable, even from ex-Eagles. I saw the quote from Seth Joyner, who was a great defensive player for Philadelphia. Here's the quote: "I've never been more ashamed to be associated with the Philadelphia Eagles than I am tonight." And it's, you know, given, I think if the other game in that division doesn't play out the way it plays out, and yeah, it was mistake filled, as you mentioned, you and Will Gavin and I are on the radio for the last 2.5 minutes, and there's a mistake here and a mistake there. And, you know, it just seemed to be such a struggle. It was like, who wants this less? It felt like, but you've got two teams competing, and no matter what, how, you know, inadequate the division's been all year in terms of consistent football, I've often tweeted out the record that the NFC East has against everybody except themselves, because there'd be, you know, 2-3 weekend stretches where you'd go and none of the four teams could beat anybody except each other. So It's been a long ride for the NFC East. But last night, just when we think we've got a competitive game, we've got some potential drama, the Philadelphia Eagles are not going to roll over, and play dead. And they didn't for a good chunk of that game. And, I've never seen quite a reaction like it. We know teams have stripped down assets and there's been questions. Look, you can't have it both ways. You can't criticize the New York Jets for saying, what's wrong with the Jets? They're trying in this game. What, you know, we fire Greg Williams. What's happening here? And then they go and win two games that they just plain weren't supposed to late in the season. It costs them the number one overall draft pick. You can't yell at the Jets for not getting this right, or the Miami Dolphins last year, Nat, in 2019, who seemed to have a distinct plan to finish near the bottom and try and draft, well, the quarterback they ended up drafting in Tua. They just got him fifth overall instead of first overall because of his injury circumstances. So you can't yell and scream at the Jets and then tell the Eagles, well, you're doing something terribly wrong. But I think there's a lot of red faces this morning, and I don't think this story's over this week. Doug Peterson has to explain this. Jalen Hurts, no doubt, will have a reaction for getting pulled. NBC is livid that they put a game on. They could have put a lot of other competitive games on that meant something in the standings, that had both teams trying, and they didn't get that in the fourth quarter last night with the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'll say one last thing. I know we're going to dig into it a lot. The guy I feel the worst for is Nate Sudfeld. You think he wants this attention? He doesn't. He wants to play. Everybody who's competitive in any industry, wants to play, wants to be seen, wants to be heard. And he went in the game and tried to do his best under very trying circumstances, almost no win circumstances last night. If Sudfeld wins the game, there's people that are almost going to be critical of it because the Eagles were trying something and it blew up in their face. They protect their draft spot, and that's basically what Jacksonville's done all year. The Jets have done all year, but you can't do that at that particular point in time. You can't look like you're playing the game one way for 54 minutes and play it another way for the last six. You can't.
Well, the timing is key, and the optics, a word that I feel like we've used a lot over the last 12 months, Greg Brady, very, very fundamental as well, because they were down 17-14, 2 minutes left to play in the third quarter. Peterson goes for it on 4th-and-4. And then, of course, Sudfeld came in after that play. Now, it's worth pointing out, if you're putting the case for the Eagles defense, because to kind of follow your point through, the Eagles looked at this and thought, well, our season's done. Why should we do the Giants a favor? We're going to get a better draft pick if we lose this. So we're not going to go and deliberately throw the game, but we might make it a little bit easier for Washington to get over the line. And Peterson was saying, actually, if you look at the number of starters, Slay and others out there, it's not reasonable to say we threw the game. Also look at Jalen Hurts' numbers. When he was pulled, he was hardly lighting the joint up, right? I kind of know he was being dynamic with his legs again and, of course, had the scores, but it wasn't as if he was pulling a quarterback in red hot form here. Sudafeld comes in, and I'm just putting the case for the Eagles defense. I'm not saying that I'm buying this argument, but Sudafeld comes in and isn't any better than Jalen Hurts, but he's not much worse than Jalen Hurts either. There isn't a kind of a tangible regression because Hurts wasn't playing particularly well, other than, of course, adding that dynamic ability, right, that he has with his legs. So I guess Peterson would argue, well, look, it's the end of the season. We don't have to do anybody a favor. He's been, and this is a point I've heard made by quite a few Philly fans on social media, and you're right, they're divided. They seem to be some embarrassed, some supporting, or at least pushing the argument for, you've got to give these guys a shot. They've been on a roster all season long. Why not give them a day in the sun, a few snaps? Now, it might be fans, it might be far-fetched, but we made the very point on our radio show last night, Greg, that for all these players who are bit part players, who are perennial backups, second and third stringers, week 17 gives quite a lot of them an opportunity to go out and play ball and make a name for themselves, and in many cases, secure a spot on a roster going forwards. So you put all those things together. Look, I'm not buying that argument, but that is what the Philadelphia or the Peterson apologists are suggesting. And I guess it comes down to the fact that it was badly handled. You've seen, as the point you've made, Jacksonville playing Mike Glennon over Gardner Minshew. Quite clearly, that is going to be a negative. That is going to short stack them. It's going to weaken them in terms of competitiveness. But we roll with it. We're okay with it. You mentioned the Miami fire sale. They got rid of so many assets. It's a front office play. It's a coaching at least acquiescence, accepting the fact that that is happening because I'm going to be building for the future over the next few years. We were okay with it. So I think it's the execution here as opposed to the principle, isn't it?
I think you nailed it. It's the element of surprise. And remember, no one's going to buy the notion that, well, we want to give, you know, Sudafeld a look because we think he's the quarterback of their future. Right. But honestly, teams do that all the time. They do. And if you're doing that, and you announced that earlier in the week and you say, this is what we want to do. We want to look at this younger quarterback, or we want this player to play, or this veteran player is a bit too banged up. But that's not what transpired last night. So you had the element of surprise. You had the whole, and maybe this gets more lost in the shuffle, Nat, if it's, you know, one of several 1 o'clock games, because we know we talked about it live on the air. We're like, you had that strange scenario where you had Miami Dolphins fans hoping the Pittsburgh Steelers would keep a lot of their starters in and play as many of their good players as possible. Then the Dolphins lose their game. The Steelers lose to the Browns, and Miami's forced to hope that Jacksonville can find it, you know, find it somewhere to compete with the Indianapolis Colts. Look, you put yourself in a bad position. No one is going to feel, tremendous empathy for the New York Giants or the Dallas Cowboys, whoever won that game. It's really tough to feel bad because you needed someone else to help you in the NFC East, especially given the division winner was 7-9. But it's more the plan that the Eagles laid out. Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator, I don't know if you saw the video or your listeners saw it earlier in the week, but he said, well, we've got a no hat rule. You just don't come into the link and put on a division champion hat. So we're playing this hard. And you can't argue that the defense did that against Washington's offense. You can't. But there's players in that locker room. I find it hard to believe Zach Ertz, a Super Bowl champion, one of only a few left on offense from the Eagles from their Super Bowl win in Minneapolis. Malik Jackson, who won a Super Bowl with that tremendous, tremendous Denver defense the last year they won out in San Francisco and Santa Clara when the Broncos beat Carolina in Peyton Manning's last ever game. I don't think those guys can go into the locker room and knowing that that was their last minute of football in a weird 2020 year, think of everything every single person on the planet has sacrificed, but NFL players have made those sacrifices as well. And think about that being your last minute of football. I don't think those two players care, Jackson or Ertz. about the Eagles drafting sixth or drafting ninth. Of course, if it's your organization, you want what's best. And I don't doubt there's Jacksonville players excited that they'll be playing with Trevor Lawrence next year. Or there's Jets players that will be excited that they might change direction. How could there not be? The Chargers and Justin Herbert this year. Yes, you know, that's going to be that's a human nature thing to want to be surrounded by other people who are as talented as you. But nonetheless, it's how the Eagles did it. It's not that they did it. It's the methodology and the explanation afterwards that just caught everybody by surprise. We just assumed Jalen Hurts was playing all 60 minutes. If the Eagles say earlier in the week he's not, then you've got a better sense of what's going on. But then again, it's big business, the NFL. We know that. Maybe the NFL and NBC say, not sure we want this game on Sunday Night Football. Maybe we want the Seahawks game against the Rams-Arizona game. Now, remember, on paper, that looks like a good game 2 weeks ago. And I know we'll get there with Kyler Murray against Jared Goff. And halfway through the first quarter, you got neither guy on the field. And it turned into a bit of a farcical circus as it is with the Rams coming out victorious. So I think it's going to linger. I think the story is going to linger for several days in Philadelphia. But it doesn't change the practice that NFL teams are just going to do that. And once they're eliminated from playoff competition, what is there to gain other than a great draft pick? That's what the front offices think anyway.
Yeah. And I understand that rationale. What have they got? Also, it's worth, I think, pointing out that Giants fans, and look, I've always had a soft spot for the Giants organization. And, you know, Jay Bell, OC, friends of the show, of course, ex-Giants. So I like him as a team. But you're a 6-10 team. Like, you can't be too upset about the way this has gone down and that you haven't made the playoffs at 6-10.
No, you can't. I mean, and look, of course, every game affected. Who wasn't thinking that if you were a Dolphins supporter or a Dolphins player? Your playoffs go up in flames. You just give up 56 points to an arch rival in the Buffalo Bills. But let's face it, the ending of that Titans-Texans game was so beneficial for you. You'd be drafting sixth in the draft instead of third if the Texans come back and win. So look, everybody needs somebody else at some point in time in this particular league to do them a favor, either with letting a player go that you're desirous to go grab, or at least as far as the draft picks go. Look, Jacksonville's never going to forget how they felt when they watched the Jets win games in week 15 and week 16, because it got them Trevor Lawrence. And I don't think there's any question. I know Brian Baldinger told us yesterday on the radio show. I was a bit surprised at that. I know we were tight for time, but nonetheless, I just don't think there's a scintilla of a chance that Jacksonville isn't drafting Trevor Lawrence. I don't think they look at Justin Fields and think that's the route we're going to go. Now, the Falcons or the Jets, teams that might need to draft a quarterback, might consider taking offers for that pick, but we know Jacksonville's taking Trevor Lawrence. That's ironclad.
Yeah, I agree with you. I guess we touched on it. The Fields' performance in the semifinal has turned quite a few heads, and rightly so. He was lights out, and if he goes on and does that again against Alabama, maybe that will heighten the intensity of that question. But I can't see any other call. That's recency bias in full effect. So Washington roll into the playoffs. That's the upshot of what went down. And at a home game as well, of course, being the NFC East divisional winner, they land that home field spot and they're playing the Bucks. And we were talking about this as we were breaking down the early window games and watching Tampa Bay wheeling out all their starters and going for the jugular, because they knew they needed to win to lock down that fifth seed. And that is the softest landing spot out of any of the possible ones for them going up against whoever won the East. And that stage, of course, they didn't know if it was going to be Dallas or the Giants or indeed Washington. Washington, I think we agree, is the toughest out of the three. Certainly the toughest matchup for the Bucks because of their defense and because of the pressure that defense can create on Brady, which we know is, you know, simplistic terms, has been the blueprint historically to rattling and unsettling Brady, those great Giants team with OC, of course, the prototype, the blueprint of that. And out of those three teams, the Giants, the Cowboys and Washington, clearly the front seven that is most capable of doing that. But the way that this Bucks offense is rolling now, Greg, and the fact that this Washington offense, much as we love the Alex Smith story, and they're certainly not completely anemic, they are going to realistically struggle against an altogether solid Bucks defense. Is there any argument you can put for Washington causing an upset?
I can't see it. I do think we could get a closer game. I know the, you know, the spread is one of the, you know, one of the larger ones out there to look and say it's 7.5 points. Of course, the Bears are bigger underdogs, going down to New Orleans and playing, what's a pretty rested New Orleans Saints core, all told. But yeah, I think Chase Young, it's going to be fun to watch him, you know, take on the Tampa Bay offensive line and try and get at Tom Brady, obviously. Who isn't, you know, is probably the least mobile quarterback coming into the playoffs. So it's going to be fun to watch Washington do what they do. And I don't doubt that people have loved the Alex Smith story. I mean, who saw this coming? There are three players. We got to remember Kyle Allen on the roster as well. Right. Kyle Allen, Dwayne Haskins, and Alex Smith. And you're just thinking Smith's going to hold a clipboard, potentially might get in a game or two in mop up duty for what's going to be a lousy team. And that's a team that's probably going to be at the bottom of the NFC East standings. They were picked almost. I can't think of a playoff team where people were like, I don't know, Buffalo, maybe it's their year. Maybe it's not. Cleveland, maybe it's their year to get it back in after an 18 year absence. Maybe it's not. But none of us had Washington as a playoff team. And we didn't know at the time. Here's the irony. We could have had Washington Nat as a 7-9 team. But we just thought Dallas and Philadelphia will be teams that will be 11-5 and 10-6. So it won't matter if Washington's 7-9 or not. So I don't see it coming that Washington can go to Tampa. They don't have to, but they're playing a team with four more wins than they have. And I also think nobody, you know, the gods of the NFL probably want this very badly. And that's a Green Bay Packers Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. They want an Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady playoff game. Fox wants that. Think about how many times we've looked at the playoff schedule on days like this in early January and thought, boy, that Green Bay New England Super Bowl, maybe this is the year. They both have bye weeks. They're both, and it's been Tom Brady, believe it or not, that's led up to, you know, he has fulfilled his part of the bargain. How many times have the Patriots made the Super Bowl? Five times since Green Bay has last been in. Tom Brady's been one of the Super Bowl quarterbacks representing the AFC. So we've been denied. I'm trying to think of a matchup where two of the all-time greats. We saw one Montana-Marino matchup. We saw plenty of Marino-Kelly matchups. We saw Montana and Aikman. We saw Aikman and Favre. Brady Rodgers, and we've seen Rodgers and Breeze. Brady Rodgers seems like the one matchup as far as quarterback go. And I don't know, you know, both guys over the age of 36, you know, we don't know how many more years Tom Brady's going to play. There's no talk of retirement. Remember, there was at this time last year,
right,
as New England was about to crash out in their first playoff game. So Washington's story is neat. Alex Smith's story is neat. I think we all want to see Tampa go up to Lambeau Field and have a fascinating game with the Buccaneers and the Packers, two former NFC Central division rivals. I think we want that.
And I think we'll get it as well. I think it's reasonably clear cut for the Bucs there. But I think fair play to Washington. Looking at it, I think they deserved it. You know, like I say, the Giants at 6-10. Come on, did you really feel that? Such a weak division as the East, you deserve that playoff spot. The Cowboys are baffling, and we'll save that for a rainy day. Some of the play calls and decisions from Mike McCarthy there, the Dalton throw as well, which was extraordinary because it was like a last chance heave, last chance saloon kind of throw into traffic. He didn't need to do that. Then he thought they got the ball back. It was a crazy finish to that game. But in the end, it was all fundamentally irrelevant because Philly did what they did. Peterson did what he did. Do you think, and we're recording this on Monday, we know Adam Gase is gone. We expect Doug Marrone to go as well. The reports coming out before that game, Greg, were that Peterson will survive. He's one of those coaches very much on the line here. Do you think what went down last night might have any bearing on his future?
I don't think it changes anything. I do think Doug Peterson will be on one of the shortest leashes imaginable. And that's not really based on contract next year for 2021. I think there's a few NFL coaches that, you know, saved their skin that might have been on the hot seat this year. I think Matt Nagy was on the hot seat. Well, the Bears ended up making the playoffs after a disastrous midseason run. I think a few things. One, if you're in contract right now because of COVID, because of teams, you know, teams are still making money without fans in the stands, or at least, you know, a good chunk of fans in the stands. But where they're hurting is obviously, you know, fan spending in the stadium, merchandise, parking. You know, the teams are not, again, no one's going to cry for NFL owners, but I think you need a really good reason to get rid of a head coach after 2020. And there were guys that were hanging on for dear life during the season. Dan Quinn, relieved of his duties in Atlanta. Matt Patricia, relieved of his duties in Detroit. We mentioned Gase. We mentioned, you know, the potential for Doug Marrone. So I think there's a lot of coaches that you're going to want to see more of. Cliff Kingsbury is going to be okay in Arizona. I really believe that. Doug Peterson's going to be fine in Philadelphia. And obviously there's a good chunk of, is it working with Vic Fangio in Denver? You can certainly make the case that it's a struggle there, but to pay some of these guys out, and let's not even get into John Gruden, who really struggled, I thought, with some coaching decisions and calls down the line. Is it 7 years left? They're not, you know, the Davis family is not paying John Gruden 7 years of salary not to coach. So maybe we don't quite see the circumstances with NFL coaches and the carousel that we see often on Black Monday quite as significant as we've seen in other years. In particular, Kyle Shanahan, safe as a kitten in San Francisco. He made the Super Bowl last year. There's some capital built up there. So yeah, I think you're going to see a quieter sense, and I think Doug Peterson will be part of that quiet. But if we can all get our lives back to normal by fall of 2021, and fans are in the stands again, and Eagles fans are allowed to boo Doug Peterson on principle when they don't like his decisions, and when Carson Wentz is with another organization, they got to make a good deal there to push Carson Wentz out. He's done as an Eagle. I don't think there's any question about that. But of his own volition. But Doug Peterson's going to be on one of the shorter leashes as far as coaches go in 2021, but I'm sure he'll be back.
I love that idea of next Christmas Eagles fans throwing snowballs at Doug Peterson if he's still there and they're rolling to a 7-9 season. Who's going to be their quarterback as well is a big question. Is it Jalen Hurts? It's something we'll definitely get into in the off season. Let's move on. Speaking of quarterback decisions, to the Rams, who overcame the Cardinals in a game, as you've pointed out, Greg, that was maybe not as we expected it would be, of course, with John Wolford and Chris Strievler, the respective backups for the Rams and the Cards, seeing a lot of action. There was no Goff, of course, because of his thumb. And that is the big question rolling into the super wild card weekend. The Rams on the road to the Hawks, of course, on Saturday. That's the middle game on Saturday. And I'm reading a few interesting editorials this morning, Greg, that I'm not sure about the fitness of Cup. Is Wolford of Goff, is Wolford going to get the start again? And if he does, is that altogether a bad thing as far as the Rams are concerned? Rams fans seem a little bit divided here. Now, I know Goff has been frustrating this season. He's been fairly profligate with the ball, which has wound up Sean McVay in particular. That's something you can count on Goff typically as being a very capable protector of the ball. You and I, as we've discussed many times, big Goff fans. We definitely see the upside with him, maybe more than others, but it's a very real question. And I guess either way you cut it, whether it's Goff, whether it's Wolford, going into Seattle, the Rams defense is balling, but their offense isn't. It's going to be a very difficult proposition, whoever's under center.
Yeah, I think that's true. I get why Seattle is, a notable favorite. 4.5 is what I've seen so far. But I think that grows, you know, significantly if Jared Goff is ruled out later in the week. Now, the Rams probably want to dress him no matter what, probably want to make it seem like he can go. Remember all the theatrics that often New England would go to. I think New England went with that a few years ago in the playoffs when Tom Brady had an injured hand, a very injured hand, one that looked like he'd sliced open. They were very secretive with him practicing with gloves on. So, Goff needed this past week off. It's a shame for the Rams they don't have yet another week, but it's not a conventional season. And obviously they didn't play well enough to win the division or come close to getting a bye. But yeah, Cooper Kupp they need in the lineup. I'd mention Michael Brockers as well, who's had a great season at defensive end for the Rams. He's been out because of COVID-19. So they need to get him back on the field as well. But familiarity really breeds contempt. I love this game. I know there's some people saying, come on, Seahawks and Rams again. I can't get enough of the two teams playing each other. I think it's great. And if anything, it was the four. I thought every game in the NFC West this year was going to be fantastic. And if anything, the Cardinals' inconsistency and the 49ers, you know, let us all down by not giving us great games in the NFC West. I thought top to bottom, it was the best division. So I have no problem with the Rams and Seahawks. You got a lot of players that have played in the Super Bowl. You got a lot of players in this game that have won playoff games. But yeah, I don't think the Rams can be competitive in this game. I don't think they can, you know, switch to a really conservative offense and run the ball like crazy with Daryl Henderson and Cam Akers in this particular game. I don't think they'll have Cam Akers. Will they have Cam Akers? I don't know. I don't know whether he's healthy or not to play. He played in the game yesterday. So yeah, why wouldn't he be? 21 carries. 34 yards, but he hasn't been terribly effective.
They thought he was going to be a scratch yesterday. Then he was a late start, wasn't he? And it didn't look effective. So I think it's fair to say he's banged up. On Arizona, Greg, lot of criticism coming Cliff Kingsbury's way. Now, he, by all accounts, is safe, right? I think he's one of those coaches that is going to get the bullet. But when we looked at this new era of Kingsbury, and I know that there are really cosmetic, superficial elements to this that have accentuated the perspective, most notably probably the Brett Easton Ellis draft room that we were doing that, weren't we?
We're all still envious of it. I haven't lost my. I've dreams about being in that draft room.
But I think that does definitely fan the flames of progressive, new school, cutting edge at the air raid offense. He's been paired together with Kyler Murray. This is going to be an offense that blows up the NFL, and it hasn't lived up to that at all. And there have been some pretty damning editorials about the fact that the offensive success they've had has been despite Kingsbury, not because of him, and Kyler Murray improvising and freewheeling because he's able to, because he's that kind of player, but being hindered really by what is around him. It's not how they expected this to go. So that's going to be a really interesting development, missing the playoffs. Going into next season, he is going to be a head coach under a lot of pressure, isn't he?
Oh, he is. As I said, I think it's him and Doug Peterson, not just in the NFC, but throughout the entire NFL, and that are under the most pressure going into next year. And I would say I think they got into some shootouts. They obviously scored a ton more points than they did last year when Kyler Murray was a rookie. But Murray has a little bit of that scenario that I notice sometimes with Deshaun Watson, where you just think you can do too much on your own at times, and you shouldn't, because he's got a reliable running game in Kenyon Drake. And I thought, you know, from time to time, Chase Edmonds gave them good yardage and good, you know, good games, good halves, good series all year long. But a superstar, obviously, in DeAndre Hopkins, an absolute gift. From Bill O'Brien to land under the Christmas tree last year, or at least a little later than that, closer to the spring. But Arizona does need to do a little bit more. And I know so much of it has been, there's going to be that great debate. We were talking about it yesterday on the Sunday show with Miami and differing between their coordination, what Brian Flores wants, what the offensive coordinator wants, and what Tua is capable of. I think Kyler Murray is going to, you know, grow into this league. But it's living proof that even as a rookie quarterback, and especially one that uses his feet, we're all looking for somebody to make the transition from college to pro like Russell Wilson did, with you knowing when to run, knowing what to do by design, knowing when to improvise, knowing when not to make the wrong play at the wrong time. And if anything, yesterday, I think I'd look and I'd say, there must be somewhere in Arizona where there's going to be a bit of an internal look-see at why they deemed him ready to play yesterday. You watched him at the end of that San Francisco game and that ankle injury, and you thought, he won't be ready a week from now. And they had an extra day as well, given that was a Saturday game. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking of it really early yesterday morning, thinking, well, the last time we saw Kyler Murray, we didn't know if he was going to get carted off on a stretcher or not. And he just looked morose and devastated and defeated on the sideline as that game finished up against San Francisco. Yes, they're losing and really blowing an opportunity to control their own destiny to go to the postseason. They needed Chicago to lose yesterday to get some help, obviously. But nonetheless, I think Kingsbury will be under some significant heat. I think it's a tremendously difficult division to accomplish things in. And we've seen that so far, just 13 wins in 32 games since Cliff Kingsbury is there. And when you get the number one overall pick you've got to ascend. So there's big pressure on Arizona to make sure they're a 10, 11 win team next year and not an eight, not a 7 or 8 win team.
Okay. You mentioned the Bears game. Blown away in the end, I think it's fair to say, by the Packers, who were short-stacked, particularly on the line. Of course, Bakhtiari not there, and there was, I suppose, initial cause for concern that Bears front seven might wreak havoc as a result. But Aaron Rodgers took care of business once again. He surely locked the MVP down as a result of that. Devontae Adams had his 18th touchdown catch of the season. In the end, it was plain sailing, 35-16, but it didn't matter as far as the Bears are concerned because they make it to the playoffs. Nevertheless, they are heading to New Orleans, as you mentioned earlier on, probably the biggest dog in the early lines so far. Green Bay locking the number one seed with a comprehensive win and, of course, get the week off as a result. And everything seems to be coming together on both sides of the ball for the Packers. Looking at that NFC playoff setup then, New Orleans as the number two seed on paper, the closest to Green Bay. Do you think it is stacked out as it should? The obviously the outlier of the NFC East notwithstanding, you look at the seedings there. Do you think that is pretty much as the power ranking should be in the NFC?
I think Tampa actually has the best team to beat Green Bay. I do think they are set up the most for an aerial shootout there. Obviously, they've accentuated their running game with the add of Leonard Fournette. I think he's been a better success there than many of us wondered whether he would be or not through either his own desire to be excellent. And let's face it, Antonio Brown has added another threat to that offense. It's been a quiet story. I know he got a lot of looks yesterday. Tom Brady was trying to help him get a bonus, as a matter of fact. So he threw him a couple shovel passes in the fourth quarter. But look, we can debate the character and the ethics and the morals of Antonio Brown all we want, and it's a valid argument. It's an important conversation. Yet Tom Brady sees something in him because this is the second go round, and Tom Brady did the same different scenario with Josh Gordon over and over again in New England. He's like, no, let's get him back. So there's something there with Tampa Bay. I think they're the biggest threat to Green Bay. And remember, you know, there have been stumbles at times. A lot of times the Green Bay Packers have had that first round bye, gone on and blitzed their opponent the second week, but ended up not getting things done either in the NFC title game, or they have been at times a one and done team. Colin Kaepernick and the Niners knocked them off at Lambeau Field on wild card weekend. Eli Manning and the Giants, the year they went and had their second Super Bowl run against New England, shocked a 15-1 Packers team. They utterly outplayed them, and Eli Manning outplayed Aaron Rodgers in that game. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Rodgers. And I think Tampa Bay, I think they're going to get their best game in that weekend where Tampa Bay probably advances, and hopefully we get a New Orleans Seattle semifinal as well. I see the room for some of the lower seeds, Nat, to make some movement in the AFC. I don't think the Bills beating the Colts is necessarily a sure thing. I get why they're favored. Browns, can they play with the Steelers? Why not, given how Pittsburgh's played? I don't count, what happened in week 17 with the resting of their starters. And even Ravens Titans feels like the biggest toss up of all. But I just think it's almost chalk in the NFC this coming weekend. I get why the Seahawks, the Buccaneers, and the Saints are all notably favored, and we're probably going to get Buccaneers, Packers, and Saints Seahawks. But I think Tampa's Green Bay's biggest threat because of how they're built.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the concerns about the offense, and you referenced Brady's lack of mobility, I think that has been, again, and we've talked about it on the show, in an era when you have freewheeling movement, motion, dual threat quarterbacks, I think there is at times an unfair criticism. And this applies to the Colts as well. I think their offense, similar issues with Rivers, and I think particularly Rivers' lack of deep ball as well, that when those offenses aren't flowing, that is particularly acute. The concern is very, very amplified as a result. But the Bucs have been cruising now for weeks. They're timing it absolutely right in that respect. And I think in terms of, the sucker punch team there, it is very much them. And I've been supporting them all season long, even through the rough patches, as I was for many weeks with the Steelers. Even wrote an editorial piece for the Times on how ridiculous it is to write off Mike Tomlin and write off this Steelers side when they were getting so much criticism. And then jumped off the bandwagon just as they've started to arrest the slide and get things moving again. With regards to what happened last night, it's interesting you say that, the Browns clearly have a shot, but I would be concerned if I was a Cleveland fan, given how close that ended up being. And I know you could argue, well, with so much on the line, it was inevitable that Cleveland were going to do something like that and run it right to the wire. But when you were dealing with Mason Rudolph, primarily, obviously, Josh Dobbs got some snaps as well, a Pittsburgh defense that was short stacked, that was still creating a lot of pressure on Baker Mayfield and that Browns line that had Jedrick Wills back, of course, who didn't play against the Jets, four sacks on Mayfield. The fact that game ran close, the fact this is going to be a rerun with a refreshed Big Ben and a Steelers that are going to be re-up defensively, I can't see a Browns upset. I mean, I know they're capable of running the table for a little while, but even in this game, they were completely streaky and going from efficient, more than efficient offensively to anonymous offensively. And this maddening, enigmatic Cleveland offense, I think is going to be really, really difficult to back with any kind of conviction going into this one, Greg.
I do. I think this is Pittsburgh's game. I think it was a benefit to let Cleveland, you know, have their, you know, again, Pittsburgh didn't roll over in the game. You could tell Mason Rudolph and that group really wanted to win. They're a 2-point conversion away from probably forcing overtime. They're very close to getting the onside kick and stressing out Browns fans even more. We'd have the Dolphins in the playoffs this morning and the Browns out had Pittsburgh had the last minute go their way. But yeah, the matchup is not a great one for the Browns. And I think they celebrated with such euphoria. And I get it. I wouldn't expect them to temper that somewhat. That gets debated all the time in North American sports. Is this team over celebrating? They look at baseball celebrations where there's, you know, you win the division or win a wild card, clinch a wild card, and there's champagne celebrations. They don't really do that in the NFL. But I'd have understood if the Browns had let a little more loose than, you know, the stalwarts, right? The Packers, the Seahawks, the aforementioned Pittsburgh Steelers. So
see, where I've got an issue on that one over celebration is when a defense on a goal line stand and say it's second and goal makes the stop and celebrates like they won the game. That's where I'm going to draw the line.
Yeah, you got two more. Yeah, you got two more stops to make at a right. certain point in time.
But it happens.
So it does a lot. I'm not going to say that the Browns will just be happy to be there, but I think we've all seen it too often where that team needs to sort of, you know, exhale. They're thrilled that they're there. Their fan base is thrilled that they're, and it's again, you know, you can't even describe the shame and the awful tragedy that COVID-19 is for so many more reasons than sport. But wouldn't that be something to have Browns fans invade Pittsburgh and have that stadium remarkably divided? Because this is kind of old hat to the Steelers. And yet, the very first Super Bowl I attended was at Ford Field in Detroit, Steelers and Seahawks, and it was a home game for Pittsburgh. That was an unbelievable scenario. That's the Matt Hasselbeck Seahawks with Mike Holmgren still coaching. Right. And Big Ben's probably in his second full season. The yellow and gold towels, it had to be about 85%. So Pittsburgh fans really love to come out and support, but this would have been a special thing for Browns fans. Obviously, you got the first Buffalo Bills home playoff game in 25 years, but you've got the first Browns playoff game period in 18 years. So it'd be a remarkable, remarkable day, you know, next Saturday and obviously Sunday, but we're not going to get to see it. Yeah, I'm with you. I like the Steelers in the game. I hope the Browns can keep it close, and I think it's going to be trial by fire for Baker Mayfield. I liked so much of what he did this season and the added maturity and the fact that nothing seemed to snowball for the Browns this year. They seemed to take things in stride, had a little bit of a stumble halfway through the season, right? They had 7 points against the Raiders or Steelers in a 38-7 blowout. They barely beat the Bengals the next week. They get 6 points at home against Las Vegas, and they fall to 5-3. But they righted the ship. They won 4 straight and basically solidified. And still, so they're sitting there at 9-3 and not even a lock for the playoffs at that particular point. Again, they got in by very narrow circumstances. But I think we're all fascinated to see how the Browns fare with so many guys playing their first ever playoff game. And certainly in that uniform, they are.
Clearly, Baker has progressed. And I guess a lot, speaking of recency bias, will depend on how they play and how he plays in particular against Pittsburgh, if they do go down, whether they go down swinging or whether he has a bad Baker day. But let's assume that he doesn't. Let's assume that he performs at the very least as he has been for much of this season. huge credit to him because he was absolutely a quarterback playing for his gig going into this season, and a vilified figure because of his early era pro career off the field shenanigans and the moxie and everything else. But credit to Kevin Stefanski as well, who has been brought in particular to make the most use of this abundance of talent that Freddie Kitchens had, but couldn't get them to gel. Is Stefanski the front runner in your mind for coach of the year, Greg?
I would give it to Sean McDermott. I think the job he's done in Buffalo, I know that there's, you know, winds change in that division, obviously, with New England taking a massive step back. The Jets are still miles away from being competitive, and Miami may have overachieved. I know there's going to be an argument for Brian Flores, but for me, it's Sean McDermott. I'm trying to find an NFC coach that I'd look at. You can look at the job that Bruce Arians did and said, that's great, improving Tampa. Oftentimes, the coach of the year is the guy that improves his club by the most in wins and losses, but they were bound to improve, making a change from Jameis Winston to Tom Brady, who just takes care of the football better, adding Rob Gronkowski to a stable of weapons, making a couple upgrades on the defensive side. So, you know, there's a lot of guys. It would be uncool to say Pete Carroll deserves some consideration. I think he's done it. I think he's done a magical job in Seattle. I think we're underrating him as one of the all-time great NFL coaches. Because he's had a couple stops before with the Jets in New England before he went to USC and revolutionized and really brought pride back to that university. And they've stumbled on harder times since then. They're no longer a perennial power or a national championship contender, not since Pete Carroll left. So to me, it's Sean McDermott, but not by much. I'm not gonna diminish the job Stefanski's done there. And I think you're going to have real stability in that division for a long time, because clearly Steelers with Tomlin, Baltimore with John Harbaugh, those might be behind Belichick. Those might be the two longest tenures in the NFL. So there's a real sense of stability when we're going to have all these other teams, and it's the usual teams looking to find that magic elixir. The Jets are looking for the right coach. The Lions are always looking for the right coach. So there's a bunch of teams that are going to be on the hunt. Now Atlanta, you've got some real stability, I think, now in that division with at least three of the head coaches there.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Flores and Miami. Ultimately, as you alluded to, falling short, and there was always going to be one good team that wasn't going to make the cut in the AFC, of course, because of the way the cards fell and all those teams clustered on 10 and 5. And it was Miami that fell short because everyone else around them took care of business. So the Colts get the seventh seed and they will play the Bills. That's the first game of Super Wild Card weekend. Incidentally, the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game, the final game of the weekend, Sunday night game. The Dolphins will be disappointed in terms of the manner that they went out, Greg, and inevitably a lot of criticism on Tua's desk this morning. We were covering the game and concentrating on it in particular, and you were focusing on it very much so, and Tua clearly didn't play well, but the play calling from Chan Gailey was questionable at best, and I think it also outlined, or underlined, I should say, a problem that we figured was going to be a factor when it came to the crunch, and really all season long it's been a concern for Miami, that there isn't enough talent offensively here. Yes, you've got Mike Gesicki stepping up. Of course, Devontae Parker is a serious receiver, but they are definitely, when you look at their competitors, look at the teams around them that were vying for a playoff spot, they are short stacked there. And when you combine that with a play caller that is conservative, that is run first, and a rookie quarterback that is at the first stages of his career and hasn't had a Justin Herbert style explosive introduction to the NFL, it's perhaps no surprise that it played out as it did last night.
I was worried about that matchup, and I know that we talked about Miami's schedule a fair bit on this show and elsewhere, because it just I didn't love the look of it. Really, at the start of the year, you were more worried about the New England Patriots being down the stretch. Their last four games, home against the Chiefs and Patriots, on the road against the Raiders and Bills. And remember, they barely snuck by the Raiders. They really needed some Raiders miscues to win that particular game, and some magic from Fitzmagic. We still don't know, with that pass where he was face masked, how he actually completed it. So instead of honestly, instead of a 15-yard personal foul penalty, they end up getting, you know, about 45, 50 yards through the air. So they had their moments. They really did. They're coming from a long way away. And from a team, their progression, remember, would be similar to, say, the New York Jets doing what Miami did this year, the Jets doing next year. And I don't think we think the Jets are ready at all, even with Justin Fields or whoever they take to be a 10-6 team. So it's big progress for the Dolphins. I think they're really limited with offensive weapons. I don't think a shootout with Josh Allen and that high octane Bills offense is ideal under any circumstance. Miami just does not have the arsenal to compete with a Buffalo or a Kansas City. Look how they tried to hang with the Chiefs and didn't do a bad job. But a lot of that was making Patrick Holmes turn the ball over at a key time that got them back in that game. And as well, there, you know, some defensive stops. So they're a ways away, but there's progress there in Miami. What has to be concerning is this by design to limit what Tua can do in his rookie year, or are they worried he can't do it, period? I'd like to think it's more the former than the latter, but you're right that that's week 17. It often lingers. It often lingers into the off season for a few weeks and maybe even a few months, where you get no stops at all from the defense. There just aren't any plays by any of their playmakers when you give up 56 points. I know Buffalo had some short fields. I know that, but nonetheless, it left a really bitter taste going into the off season. But I don't think Dolphins fans, they're not devastated. They're not in the prime of, you know, somebody's career. This isn't like a Dan Marino team with Don Shula where they missed the playoffs. And they did that a couple of times on the last week of the regular season where you say, wow, there's another opportunity for Marino to go in the playoffs and try and go after what he wants so badly. And they missed it. If anything, it's more a new beginning than the door getting slammed shut on something that was promising.
I completely agree with that. And it's interesting and perhaps at the same time, paradoxically, not surprising that there is so much overreaction to Tua's performance last night, because for all of the reasons we've just said, it is perhaps no surprise that we're watching a young quarterback who at a crossroads in his early career and took the wrong route last night. That doesn't mean that he's going to be a bust. And some people are calling him a bust, which is ridiculously short-sighted when you consider as well, he was injured. He was out of the game, out of any football for a long time. It's been a COVID season, and he is at the very early stages of his career that I don't think we've seen nearly enough of what he's capable of. I think the positive sides for Dolphins fans, absolutely, that he has demonstrated that he is healthy and he's going to remain healthy. In specifically the injury that he had, there was question about whether if he was hit the first time, what was going to happen? Is he going to be able to play? Is he a croc? And he's shown in the body of work that he's had that he's absolutely not. And this is a very, very strong defense. It's an offense with the draft capital they've got that they can really, really build around. And you mentioned Buffalo and the progression they've made. And we had this conversation, Greg. I remember this vividly at the end of last year, because it was the show, I think we were talking about whether Eli Manning was a Hall of Famer or not. And we talked about the obvious holes in the Buffalo Bills, and they went out and sorted that out. It was a similar issue. If you look at the Bills team last year, very well coached, very disciplined defensively, much more defined by its defense than anything else, a promising young quarterback that needs to take the next step, and he doesn't have enough around him. And they went out and got Diggs, and we've seen what's happened then. I'm not saying that Tua is going to have pound for pound the same progression and trajectory that Josh Allen has had this year and the Bills have had offensively this year. But if they get him a weapon even close to that, it's going to be, I think, a very different story with
Yeah. You go make the big spend, make the big splash, spend the first round draft pick. Right? Yeah. And Buffalo did that at the right time for Diggs. Right. Remember when they didn't do it at the right time and Rex Ryan wanted to draft Sammy Watkins, and that was the wrong time. Their quarterbacks were Kyle Orton and EJ Manuel. They had no offensive line. They had no running game. That's not when you go out and you spend draft, you spend draft capital. I want to say they utilized two first round picks to go up and just to trade up to go get Watkins. And there was nobody that could properly throw the ball to him. And it was a short lived experiment, really. Sammy Watkins only played better half of 2.5 seasons there before the Rams traded for him.
Yeah. So I think the future is bright, is what we're saying for Miami. So let's just recap then. The wild card weekend, Colts and Bills is the first game. Rams, Hawks, Bucks, Washington wraps up the Saturday. Then on Sunday, we've got Chicago, New Orleans in the middle, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, as we talked about at the end. But of course, Baltimore, Tennessee, the early game on Sunday. I think the game of the wild card round.
I think it is too. It has a lot to it. And, Ryan Tannehill going up against Lamar Jackson. Jackson had such an, not the MVP season he had last year, but so flawless this year. Really, at the end of the day, I was so impressed by how Lamar Jackson started to play down the stretch, ends up going over 1,000 yards rushing. And speaking of rushing, honestly, we can't let this go without noting Derrick Henry going over the 2,000 yard mark. Honestly, it's something that I never thought we would see it again. I never thought we'd see a running back. I remember being there when Barry Sanders went over 2,000 in the last game of the year against the Bill Parcells coached New York Jets. They had Keyshawn Johnson on that team as a rookie. Right. And Barry went over the 2,000 yard mark and was carried off the field by his offensive line. The fact Derrick Henry, I know they kept feeding him and feeding him and feeding him yesterday because he needed the yardage to get there. But what a remarkable story to go where he's gone. And, he was sort of just a guy early days as a running back and started to show some promise near the end of that 2018 season. And now at 26, it's just remarkable. We're getting to the point where we're going to have to talk about Derrick Henry as an all time great running back because I don't know what the longevity will be like. And I don't know. It's a little like, pitchers in baseball where you're never going to see a 300 game winner again. You won't, but my heavens, active career yards. Derrick Henry is climbing the list. He's already 11th on the list. So he's got guys to chase down, right? The Shady McCoys and the Adrian Petersons and even the Marshawn Lynches before he gets to Frank Gore, who's still running. But no doubt he's doing it with exponential growth every year. And there's every opportunity that he's going to get there.
Brilliantly said. And it's something that it's understandable, but again, frustrating that the MVP discussion is always, almost always anyway, a quarterback. And I think Henry has maybe suffered from a brilliant season from Aaron Rodgers. And I wonder if Rodgers had had a less impressive year and was maybe a little bit closer in the final reckoning, whether this might have been one of those years that a non-quarterback got the gig. I mean, if you're a running back in this era, as you say, that racks up 2,000 yards, and it's the productivity, of course, it's the style, of course, but it is, hence the terminology, the impact on this team. And it is short-sighted and one-dimensional to say that he is the Titans' offense, but the offense cannot function without him. Tannehill does what he does with the play action. They've got AJ Brown and others around, and it's a very effective balance, but that is entirely based on the style of runner that Henry is, getting stronger incidentally as the season rolls on as well. He should do that every year, which is ominous for the Ravens. I wonder what the over under is on total running yardage in this game, because didn't Baltimore rack up over 400 yesterday, right? I mean, this is going to be the fastest playoff game.
Carry clip. I mean, it's one thing to carry the ball and have, basically three quarters of your plays on the ground to keep things safe, including Lamar Jackson running. But yeah, it's Tennessee's run defense is going to be, it's going to have to be remarkably ready. Most people, it's not the sexiest quarterback matchup. And I say that even though Lamar Jackson's in the game, but it's something I think a lot of people are going to look forward to. And Tennessee proved they weren't just a 1 year wonder with, catching some fire at the end of 2019 and obviously making some noise in the playoffs by dumping out New England.
A lot of buzz about Baltimore getting it right at the right time going into week 17, let alone what we saw from them yesterday, albeit of course against a pretty indifferent Bengals side, and that's being kind. Baltimore, the team that no one wants to face in the playoffs, right? Tennessee definitely have that moniker as well. Looking at this, looking at the teams that I guess have the biggest shot of taking down the Chiefs, because you mentioned in the NFC you feel the Bucks maybe have the best shot at taking down the Packers. What about in the AFC? Is the team most likely to take the Chiefs down in this game, do you think?
No, I think it's the Buffalo Bills. I do. I think they're playing so well right now. I think they're playing better than the Kansas City Chiefs over the last 5 weeks. On a neutral field, if that game wasn't at Arrowhead, I'd really, really struggle picking the Kansas City Chiefs as a notable favorite. I wouldn't want to give any points away. That's for sure. I think it's a coin flip game. If we end up with Chiefs and Bills, if there's no significant absences or injuries the rest of the way. And I thought that was important for Buffalo to have that comfort food at home. I know there's not going to be many fans at Orchard Park, Just 6,700 for Buffalo's first home playoff game in 25 years. But the fact they'll get to bring the Steelers there or some variation thereof, to play at they'd obviously get the Browns if the Browns end up winning, the Steelers, Browns game. Mm-hmm. So they're either going to get Pittsburgh or Cleveland at their stadium. And, it could be remarkable, remarkable football. But I think Buffalo is, it's just going to be that bye. They really, to be 13-3, Nat, and not get a bye, it's strange times. I pointed this out yesterday that when there were five teams that made the playoffs instead of six, every division winner got a bye, and you just had the two wild, you had no Saturday football, and you had the two wild card games. Of course, right. It's more fun to go from 2 to 4 to 6 wild cards, but what you've done in the process is you've really cheapened what it means to be that second seed, and I'm sure the New Orleans Saints are thinking it. I'm sure the Buffalo Bills are thinking it. There have been teams that have been 9-7 or 10-6 that have got a week off, a valuable week off at this time of year, you know, COVID season or no COVID season. And the Bills, the one thing I thought of is if they end up winning that particular game and get Pittsburgh, Buffalo plays Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Pittsburgh plays Sunday night at 8 o'clock. That's a big variation of rest. And the Steelers, I know it's not far to travel. You could basically take a bus if you wanted to from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to Buffalo, New York. But that's a big difference, almost 48 full hours between the Bills and the Steelers game. So Buffalo should be the more well-rested team if we get that matchup in the divisional playoff weekend.
We're obviously going to be on air Sunday, but Saturday with three playoff games kicking off UK time at 6 o'clock, obviously earlier for you across the pond. What is the Brady household on Saturday Super Wildcard weekend? Are you basically in the Lazy Boy? You have the mini fridge with beer stocked up or food there, just you know, bathroom breaks, and that is it? That's the only thing that takes you out of the chair? Just talk us through.
I'll have to get some form of exercise in. You're just like me, Nat. You know, you care about the body is the temple. I know, I know from spending time with you in Minneapolis that was very true. You know, you come into the hotel gym, I come out. You come right in, and maybe you stay a bit longer than me. You're younger by a couple of years. So I look and I say,
you would do like sort of 20 kilometer runs in minus 10 degrees from what I remember.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I remember the pharmacy was only about a mile and a half away. And I remember on Saturday taking an Uber, and it's the shortest Uber ride I've ever taken. And I felt a little bit guilty about it. And then the Sunday morning, I go to Prince's house, right? I go to Paisley Park. Yeah. Well, other TalkSport personnel are ice fishing. Like that, you know, honestly, the gridiron guys, Will Gavin, they're out there risking life and limb to go ice fishing.
And you're at Paisley Park. I went to Paisley Park on Monday with the DAZN boys, one of whom had unbelievable food poisoning. I spent the entire cab ride sitting in the front seat, just 1,000 yards stare out of the window. I'm not sure how much of that Paisley Park.
He was in tears because of how his stomach was. I was just because of my love for Prince. I was quite emotional. I was able to get it together before the Super Bowl kickoff in Minneapolis. But I always think about that on Sundays. We roll through the 1 o'clock games, and there's nothing like that last, you know, we're usually on air together for it, that last 45 minutes of all those games climaxing at once. And I often find I need to walk away. I probably come to the 4 o'clock games, 9 o'clock UK games, and I probably take a quarter and a half off just to pace yourself. You have to do that. I'm almost revisiting those, you know, around the house, making sure nobody's missed me terribly. And usually they have not, making sure there's a plan for supper. You know, like, so there's a bit to do. There's a bit to do before you try and experience 10 straight hours of football. I'm not 22 years old anymore. I can't pull that off.
Well, listen, enjoy. I know you will. I know our listeners will. Thanks for teeing them up so well. We're going to have a preview show dropping later in the week where we'll break down each of those games in a bit more detail. But in terms of breaking down what went down week 17, nobody better than Greg Brady. Always a pleasure, but look after yourself and see you soon.
Can't wait. Thanks, Nat.
Brilliant stuff from Greg. He will be back very, very soon. So will we, of course, previewing the Super. Don't forget the Super Wildcard Weekend later on this week. Our preview show dropping Edge Rush. Hey, Edge Rush still rolling as well. Another acca landed by me and Propo producer Ollie. So the streak is back on, and we will be bringing more of that as well later on this week. So two more pods dropping for you ahead of Wildcard Weekend. We will see you then. Bye for now.